Are you working on your author career but struggling to get that first book published? Does the goal of being an author seem too lofty? Or are thoughts of having multiple books and making a full-time living are as fantastical as living in Cinderella's castle? Welcome to Discovered Wordsmiths, a podcast where aspiring authors can be heard. Join Stephen Schneider as he finds and talks to authors you may not know, but authors that have gotten their foot on the author career path. Hear what they've done to get there and where they want to go now. Settle back. It's time for a bit of inspiration and advice. Come listen to today's Discovered Wordsmith.
All right, well, Kathy, welcome back. The second half of the podcast, we're going to talk author stuff now, get into the publishing and craft aspects a bit. As the very first question, you've written three books now. So what have you learned from your first book to the newest book that you've done differently, or some things that you were like, oh, I wish I would have known that back then?
I mean, there is so much we could fill hours of podcasts with every, I mean, the more I learn, it's the typical, the more you learn, the more you realize you need to learn.
Right. You never it's know. The old, yeah. When the teacher goes, who has a question? It's like, well, I don't even know what questions I might have.
Yeah. Starting, and I had come from a journalism background, so I understood a lot of in traditional journalism with print magazines, you know, back in the day. And so there was a lot of basic concepts about writing and publishing I already had a really firm grip on, which was super useful for me. Like, I think it kind of helped me skip a few of those painful lessons because I had learned them. And basically, my first day on the job in journalism, I was pretty much told by the marketing department that, hey, literally nobody wants to read your shit. So, and when Stephen Pressfield came out with the book by that name, I was just like, oh, my God, it wasn't just me. Like, you learn real quick that if you want people to actually read your stuff, you got to give them a reason to read it. Right. And especially these days with the distractions. You know, there's more and more distractions and more competition for people's entertainment, you know, time and dollars. Really got to think about who's your market and how are you going to give them what they want. And that's just an ongoing process. It's taken probably until my third book before I really nailed it in my mind who my readership is. And that'll probably still continue to evolve, I would imagine. So that's something that I'm learning and it's been evolving over course of the books. I also had been very accustomed to being edited and being told, hey, this isn't what we want, go redo it. So I use professional editors with all my books. And when they gave me suggestions or told me, you know, this or that, it didn't hurt my feet. I had already grown kind of the thick skin for the most part. But then every once in a while, that comment will still come up and bite you, even no matter how thick you think your skin's gotten, all of a sudden. Yeah. You know, there'll be that one comment and you're like, ah!
I can totally relate to that because, you know, the first thing I wrote, like just about every author can probably relate to this, that I'm like, wow, this is really good. I love this. Everyone's going to love it, blah, blah, blah. And then you send it to the editor, you get it back. It's like, wow, I have like 20 pages of notes and corrections. And you're like, well, they're wrong and they don't know, you know, but then after you write, this is what I tell people who are even newer than me, just keep writing. Don't worry about editing. Don't worry about publishing. Write 3 books, write 5 books, write 100 short stories and just get everything written. And then you'll start being able to really be an author. And when you get the feedback, knowing what to change and treating the books, not like as precious gold little words, but a product and doing what's right for that product and yourself. And that's, I mean, 3 or 4 years ago, I would not have even understood what that meant. It really takes some seasoning.
it takes time, and it takes time to kind of understand all that. I mean, and really when it comes down to it, an imperfect book that's finished and published is 1,000 times better than that perfect book that you're still rewriting chapter one on.
Right? Yeah, absolutely.
And, yeah, I fell into that for many years. Decades literally of the whole rewriting chapter one syndrome.
Yes. And that's so funny because just recently I've internalized and really come to the conclusion that it's more about the overall book and story. It's not about individual sentences and words. Right. Yes. You can improve your craft and improve those sentences, because that's what will keep the person reading to the next sentence and the next chapter. You know, if it's just all clunky and poorly written, they're not going to keep reading. But at the end, when it's all done, people remember the overall story, not an individual sentence here or there.
Well, I've worked also as a freelance editor with fiction authors and nonfiction too, but and a writing coach. And what I have tried to illustrate to my writers, which seems to work for a lot of people, they kind of, the light bulb seems to go off as I tell them, look, you're just trying to put up the Christmas tree right now. You got to, you know, put it up in the stand. If it's an artificial tree, you got to put all the branches in and all that.
Right. Stuff.
That's all you're trying to do right now. Once the tree is up, then you go back and put on all the decorations. You don't put on one branch and then string the lights on the one branch, right?
Right,
and
right.
You don't try and stick the star on top when most of the branches still aren't even. What do? The star is like the last thing you put on the tree.
Right. You don't put the tinsel on and then the lights, or and then the ornaments, and do the lights last. You know, there's an order. And
there's kind of an order. Just think of it like all you're trying to do on your first draft is get that Christmas tree put up in the window, in the stand, you know. So you've got the green tree standing there and it's complete and intact. Then it's always kind of fun, right? Like once you got that part of it done, you got it lugged out of the basement and all that. It's like now the fun starts. You get to like start decorating it, you know.
Right.
And
have you read The Snowflake Method?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's what that sounds like.
Yep, yep. Where you just kind of continue to just get
grow
the skeleton
it.
Down.
It's like you start at the 100,000 foot view and you keep coming closer and more detailed. So, Kathy, when you write, what do you use? Do you use Scrivener or YellowPad, or what do you usually use to write?
No, I've tried a few different. I've tried Scrivener. I tried the free thing. I have to be honest with you, you know, I'm old and I find too much technology just kind of messes me up. A long time ago, I developed a system with Word that actually isn't all that unlike Scrivener in some ways, because I use the headings, I use the comment boxes to organize some of my random thoughts or I write historical fantasy, so when I have research things I want to stick in, and I can use the comment boxes to keep some of that stuff organized. Yeah, I just kind of find that because I can learn technology. I've told myself you could do this, but I just am at a point in my life now where I just want to write the stories. I don't want to spend a lot more time paying for figuring out a whole bunch of new technologies to supposedly write better and faster and all that. Kind of got my own system. I also do a dictation system where I dictate into my phone recorder while I'm walking or hiking, and then I go home and I type it up, and everybody's like, oh, you got to use Dragon, you don't want to have to sit there and type it up. And I tried Dragon. I went back to typing up my own dictation because I found that and that's a technique I use obviously as a journalist. I interviewed thousands of people over the years and record it all, and then I type it up. Well, when you hear yourself telling the story, almost like in the oral tradition, right? You're telling the story, and you're hearing yourself tell the story, and then you have to type it up. I don't type up every single word I say exactly the way I say it. I'm editing it already. I have a much more solid scene. And yeah, I'm just saying, okay, I'm not even going to type that stuff up I just said, but this part's really good, and I'll hit pause and expand on it a little more than, you know.
Which, that method, I mean, that sounds like it may even free people up. We were going to talk about writer's block here in a minute. I think a lot of people get hung up on dictation because they feel they have to quote, and then he said, quote.
Right.
Just, you know, doing all those things, whereas just spew out what's in your head. And, you know, listen, but use that as the basis and type it up, editing as you go, in a way. I think that's a good system.
It's if someone listening is maybe interested in trying it, it there's a bit of a learning curve. A lot of people hate the sound of their voice because you have to listen to yourself telling this like ridiculous or really bad like story in bad sentences and bad prose because you're just kind of spewing it out. But you get used to your voice real quick. I mean, just ignore it. Nobody else has to hear it, you know?
Right.
You're the only one hearing it, then you can erase it right away. Right. And you do get better. It takes a while to get used to talking a story too. And some days it comes out a lot better than other days, but so what, you know?
Well, I think that might inspire me because I know that I've had dictation on the back of my brain for a while, but like a lot of people, it's like, oh, it's too hard and it's unnatural. And you know, maybe I'll approach it that way with, let me just spew the story out, edit a little bit from that. I just want to, because I do know one of the other things I've learned is I can write a better story if I'm not worried about every little piece of it as I'm doing it. If I just really get that first draft done and then go back and catch all the things I want to improve. This is kind of like another step to that too. I like that.
Yeah. Give it a try. Tell me how it works for you.
Yeah, maybe I'll try it with
adjustment though. So
yeah. Well, like you said, I'll go walking. You know, when I'm walking, I can zone. What are you doing to market your books?
Probably not near enough. As we know, we writers are bombarded with marketing ideas and I kind of got overwhelmed on my first book and I spent way too much time and money trying to market it when I should have really just been, I think, in my opinion, continuing to write. So I've put out my newsletter. I notify, you know, my subscribers that there's a new book out. Friends and family, of course, know, but again, they're not always my big market anyway.
Right.
I haven't gotten the trade reviews back yet for this book, but trade reviews has been a really good marketing tool for me because if you get a good review, they publish it in their trade journal that goes out to librarians and bookstore owners. And especially if you have a starred review, you get like instant credibility with that. So I have found that's been a really good investment so far. And yeah, you take the risk that maybe you'll get a really crappy review.
Right.
I tell authors too that I've worked with who are nervous about doing that. It's like, look, if you did the proper things, if you went through the steps on your story, you got a good editor, you went through the editing steps, you listened to your editor and revised. And if you did everything properly, you're probably not going to get a really crappy.
Hopefully if you did listen to them.
That's the key. If the editor's a good editor, because there's right. Not everybody's a good editor who says they're an editor.
And it's not even that they're necessarily bad, but sometimes you just don't click with the thinking of you write.
Yeah. You kind of need the right editor for the right genre. I would recommend putting time into finding a credible editor with a good track record. I personally prefer an editor who's also published books because there's a lot of editors out there who actually don't write.
Right.
I don't know if I'd say a lot, but it's not uncommon where they might write a newsletter or blog post, but they haven't been through the process, that process of actually publishing a fiction book. I don't think they quite get it until they actually do it themselves.
Yes, I can attest to that. Let me ask you, we were talking about your journalism and we've been talking a little bit about writer's block. You made the comment that journalism has helped you overcome writer's block. So give me a little bit about how that came about or what happened.
Well, basically in a nutshell, and I'm sure people have heard this before, but and I wasn't even on a newspaper, which has even tighter turnaround times and deadlines, but even with a frequently published magazine, ours was every other week. We had 2 million subscribers. You have deadlines, and the editor doesn't care about your angst and your writer's block and your trauma and your, you know, I just don't know what to write. They don't care. They want the story, and if you can't produce it, they're, you know, eventually your days are numbered, you know, or if you're a freelancer, right. They won't call you back. So you kind of learn very quickly that, hey, get something down on paper, you know, get some story down and at least complete the story. Then you can always go back and fix it up, but you can't just sit there forever and ever trying to make it perfect because they never are in the end.
Right.
And the more you do that, the better they get. They get better by just meeting your deadlines and cranking out the material and writing. That's how you get better, not taking forever to get one story done and constantly having an excuse to your editor why you can't get it done.
Right. There's a famous author quote, and I apologize. I totally don't remember. Maybe I'll look it up and get it right for the liner notes. But it was, I make sure I write when the muse strikes me, and I make sure the muse strikes me at 9 a.m. every day.
Is that Stephen King or who?
Was it King? No. I don't want to attribute it to him because it seems like everything's him.
Yep. That's absolutely true. And there's another quote similar to, the muse will find you when you're working.
Yes.
Or something like that.
That is so true. And I've heard several things with the writer's block that, you know, the quote unquote high-end professional writers, the ones who have been doing it for decades and have tons of books out, they're like, you know, that's your job. You can be as creative, as fanciful as you want, but your job is to write those words. So if you're going days and weeks and whatever, waiting for the right moment to strike, you're not a professional writer. You're not getting the words out. In our mastermind, that's one of the things Jay is pushing, you know, writing every day, and we're keeping track of it for everyone else to see. And there's holes, you know, and a lot of us aren't full-time professional writers. So, you know, life and family does interfere. But I think the ones that are really pushing to be a full-time author, you see it more consistently. You know, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write every single day, no matter what it is, what it takes. And just that mindset, I think, alone overcomes some writer's block.
Yeah. Well, if I could offer a bit of hope, maybe, is I have found that those days where I'm just not feeling it, but I make myself sit down, it's like, okay, I don't care. I'm going to sit down and write anyway. I'm going to, you know, sit down for at least a couple of sprints, a couple of 30-minute sprints, 40-minute sprints, whatever, and do it. No matter how bad it is, then at least I've done something. I'm going through the motions. It's not going to be good, but at least I've done something, and I won't feel so bad at the end of the day. And never fail. A lot of times, those are the days where the best stuff happens.
Because you're not expecting to do good.
Right.
You don't have the pressure on yourself.
Yeah. I'm just like, okay, I'm just gonna scribble anything just to say I have words down, and then
right.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how that happens. So
and that fits right along with a personal life philosophy. I've discovered myself that the times I really don't care that much and I'm just pushing to get something done and not trying to be perfect and all that, and my mindset is just whatever, that's the best times. The best things happen. And I think it's like Pavlov's dog. Train yourself. Once you start writing, it just keeps coming and flowing. You got to sit down. You got to put your hands on the keyboard or mouth to the mic and start doing it, because then you get into those doldrums of days of not doing any writing.
Yeah. And then you just feel worse and worse and worse. And it gets hard for me anyway. It gets harder and harder and harder to get back to the actual writing. So
it was probably not, and it might be harder nowadays, but it's probably not a bad idea for people who want to be an author to do some journalism, do some writing on a deadline for somebody. You know, hey, I'm going to pay you to write this. Nowadays, there's places that'll hire you to do, you know, 2 500-word blog articles a week or something like that. You've got a deadline. You've got to meet that deadline. It's got to be high quality. Just do it.
Yep. And I started out by doing a lot of stuff, like I said, for free for the hospital. You have to do it for free. But if you give yourself something where you have a deadline, see if that, you know, might not work for everybody, but it certainly worked for me. So
right. Well, you know, I mean, diamonds aren't formed by being in soft, cushy environments. You know,
that's so good. Yeah.
Any other advice you would have for new authors?
Oh, well, we had touched on before. We talked about maybe the cabin in the woods myth. I've lived that one. I think
tell us about that.
Yeah. A lot of us may have shared this fantasy of, you know, I'm going to be this writer and I'm going to go live in a cabin in the woods and write by myself and crank out, you know, the great American novel or whatever. And I did that. We moved to Colorado, and after we lived in a trailer for a while till we figured out where we wanted to live. And we did. We went up in the middle of nowhere, 10 miles down a dirt road outside a very small town that was like very far from anything substantial, from a grocery store or anything. And it was a road that wasn't plowed in the winter. So we're extremely isolated there. 4 years I lived there, it didn't write any fiction at all.
Wow.
I mean, I was working freelance remotely as a journalist and stuff. So I had a job. So I kept thinking it was just my job that was distracting me. And I just couldn't do any more writing at the end of the day. And really when it came down to it, then we moved back down closer to a metro area. And I got started getting involved in some writers' organizations and events and that kind of stuff. And then I started writing fiction again. That's, you know, when I got into a community again, getting into the author success group that we're in was even 100 times better than the community I had around here, actually. I kind of found the right blend of writers.
Yeah, I agree.
That worked the best for me. So, yeah, so the whole, yeah, cabin in the woods thing for me turned out to be a complete flop.
I agree. I think there's a lot of fantasy in people's minds about a writer. And still, you know, I can't say I was any different, but people think, oh, I'll just sit down one weekend, I'll write a book, I'll put it out, and I'll be a millionaire next week. And it's not like that at all. And there's a lot of other misconceptions and fantasies associated with being a writer. Because I think a lot of people really don't understand it.
Yeah. Yeah. It could be. Not to mention the fact that I started talking to the trees and stuff, too. I mean, that kind of isolation is, even for an introvert,
Well, the problem is when they start answering.
That's, yes.
When you have the problem. And the funny thing is, I think I mentioned, we've got a small, our upper acre has some woods, a really small area, but we put a cabin in that. And I haven't written once up there in the cabin.
Really?
I've got my computer set up. I've got everything. This is where I write.
Yes. Yep.
All right, Kathy, it's been really great. And it was really fun meeting you over the weekend.
Yes.
I hope we'll get to see each other on some future events also.
Yep.
Coming up.
Yep.
And you have to let us know when your next book comes out.
I will do that. And thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it. And it's been fun.
It's been a good talk. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Discovered Wordsmiths. Come back next week and listen to another author discuss the road they've traveled, and maybe sometime in the near future, it might be you.